And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's March 10th, 69th day of the year. 296 days until the end of the year. On this day in 241 BC, the first Punic War took place, the Battle of Agates. The Romans sent the Carthaginian fleet, bringing the first Punic War to an end. In 298 AD, Roman Emperor Maximian concludes his campaign in North Africa, makes a triumphal entry into Carthage. 947, the later Han is founded by Lu Ziyuan. He declares himself emperor. 1535, Spaniard Fray Thomas de Berlanga, the fourth bishop of Panama, discovers the Galapagos Islands by chance on the way to Peru. In 1607, Susenos I defeats the combined armies of Yaqub and Abuna Petros II at the Battle of Gaul and Gojam, making him the emperor of Ethiopia. 1629, Charles I dissolves the Parliament of England. That begins the 11-year period known as the Personal Rule. 1661, the French Sun King, Louis XIV, begins his personal rule of France after the death of his premier, Cardinal Mazarin. 1735, an agreement between Nader Shah and Russia is signed near Ganha in Azerbaijan. Russian troops are withdrawn from the occupied territories. 1762, French Huguenot Jean Calais, who'd been long convicted of killing a son, dies on this date after being tortured by authorities. The event inspired Voltaire to begin a campaign for religious tolerance and legal reform. 1814, the Emperor Napoleon I is defeated at the Battle of Laon in France. 1830, the Royal Netherlands East Indies Army is created. 1831, the French Foreign Legion is created by Louis Philippe, the King of France, from the foreign regiments of the Kingdom of France. As I remember the rules, you could not be a French citizen and be a member of the Foreign Legion. 1848, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo is ratified by the U.S. Senate. That ends the Mexican-American War. 1861, El Hajj Umar Tal seizes the city of Ségou, destroys the Bamana Empire of Mali. 1873, the first Azerbaijani play, The Adventures of the Vizier of the Khan of Lincaran, prepared by Akhundov, is performed by Hassan Bey Zardabi and dramatist and Najef Bey Vezirov. 1876, the first successful test of a telephone is made by Alexander Graham Bell. 1891, Alman Stroger patents the Stroger switch, a device that led to the automation of the telephone circuit switching. 1906, the Carrier's Mine disaster. It's Europe's worst ever disaster. 1,099 miners are killed in northern France. 1909, by signing the Anglo-Siamese Treaty of 1909, Thailand relinquishes its sovereignty over the Malay states of Kedah, Kalantan, Perlis, and Terengganu, which become British protectorates. 1922, Mahatma Gandhi is arrested in India, tried for sedition, sentenced to 6 years in prison. He was released after nearly 2 years for an appendicitis operation. 1933, Long Beach earthquake affects the greater Los Angeles area. 108 people are known to have died. 1944, the Greek Civil War. Political Committee of National Liberation is established in Greece by the National Liberation Front. Clearly a communist organization based on that name. 1945, World War II. Army Air Force firebombs Tokyo and the resulting conflagration kills more than 100,000 people, mostly civilians. A lot of their buildings were built of materials that involved a lot of paper, so it burned quickly. 1949, Mildred Gillars, Axis Sally, is convicted of treason. 1952, Fulgencio Batista leads a successful coup in Cuba. 1959, Tibetan uprising. Fearing an abduction attempt by China, thousands of Tibetans surround the Dalai Lama's palace to prevent his removal by Chinese forces. 1966, military prime minister of South Vietnam, Nguyen Cao Ky, sacks rival general Nguyen Khan Thi, precipitating large-scale civil military dissension in parts of the nation. 1969, in Memphis, Tennessee, James Earl Ray pled guilty to assassinating Martin Luther King. Then he attempted to recant. My step-uncle knew him and said that Coretta Scott King came to meet with him, and she apparently believed what he said. 1970, Vietnam War. Captain Ernest Medina is charged by the U.S. military with My Lai war crimes. My Lai massacre was quite the topic of discussion in 1970. 1975, Ho Chi Minh campaign. North Vietnamese troops attack Banh Mi Thao in the south on their way to capturing Saigon in the final push for a victory over South Vietnam. 1977, astronomers discover the rings of Uranus. 1990, in Haiti, Prosper Avril is ousted 18 months after seizing power in a coup. In the year 2000, dot-com bubble peaks with the NASDAQ Composite Stock Market Index reaching 5,048.62. 2006, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter arrives at Mars. At least they found the right planet. 2017, the impeachment of President Park Geun-hye of South Korea in response to a major political scandal is unanimously upheld by the country's constitutional court that ended her presidency. And in 2019, Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302, a Boeing 737 MAX, crashes, leading to all 737 MAX aircraft being grounded worldwide. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history of very prominent people. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, a toddler, Harriet Tubman in the Lutheran Church, John O'Gilvy, Macarius of Jerusalem, Rue Eugenie de Jesus, Pope Simplicius, Sojourner Truth in the Lutheran Church, Harriet Tubman Day in the U.S., Holocaust Remembrance Day in Bulgaria, Mario Day globally, Men's Day in Poland, National Women and Girls HIV/AIDS Awareness Day in the U.S., Zekeli Freedom Day in Romania, and Tibetan Uprising Day in the Tibetan Independence Movement. All right, let's see what else we might have. In 418, Jews are excluded from public office in the Roman Empire. 1198, the Giralda Minaret, designed by architect Ben Ahmad for the Almohad Mosque in Seville, is completed. It's now the bell tower for Seville's cathedral. 1578, Queen Elizabeth I of England and Ireland gives Johann Casimir £20,000 to aid the Dutch rebellion. 1624, England declares war on Spain. 1697, Tsar Peter the Great of Russia begins a tour of Western Europe. 1734, the Spanish army under Don Carlos III draws into Naples. 1783, the USS Alliance under Captain Barry fights and wins the last naval battle of the U.S. Revolutionary War off Cape Canaveral. 1791, John Stone of Concord, Massachusetts, patents the pile driver. 1791, the Pope condemns France's civil constitution of the clergy. 1801 was the first official census in Great Britain. It was revealed that the population was about 10 million. 1847, the first money was minted in Hawaii. 1849, Abraham Lincoln applied for a patent, the only president to do so, for a device to lift a boat over shoals and obstructions. 1862, Great Britain and France recognized the independence of Zanzibar. 1862, the U.S. issued its first paper money. It was a $5 bill, $10, $20, $50, $100, $500, and $1,000 notes. At one point in time, there was a $100,000 note. I saw one at in some museum. 1864, Ulysses S. Grant's named commander of the Union armies. This failed shopkeeper rose to be president. 1864, the Red River Campaign, begun in Louisiana by Union forces. 1874, Purdue University in Indiana admits its first student. And in 1876, the very first telephone call. I mentioned that earlier. It was made by Alexander Graham Bell, and he said, "Mr. Watson, come here. I want to see you." He was talking to his assistant, Thomas Watson. 1880, the Salvation Army of England sets up a U.S. welfare and religious activity. 1888, heavyweight boxing champion John L. Sullivan fights Charlie Mitchell. It lasted 30 rounds and it was a draw. 1893, the Ivory Coast becomes a French colony. 1893, New Mexico State University, which is not too far from here, canceled its first graduation ceremony. The only graduate, whose name was Sam Steele, was robbed and killed the night before. 1900, the Battle of Driefontein in South Africa. It was the Boers versus the British Army. 1902, earthquake destroys the Turkish city of Tokangri. In 1902, a U.S. Court of Appeals decides that Thomas Edison did not invent the movie camera. 1903, Harry Gammiter in Cleveland patents a multigraph duplicating machine. 1906, Baker Street and Waterloo Railway opens, built by the Underground Electric Railways Company of London. The official name became Bakerloo in July of 1906. 1910, Republic of China officially abolishes slavery. 1910, the Pittsburgh Courier begins publishing. 1913, William Knox becomes the first in American Bowling Congress to bowl 300, which is a perfect game. 1915, on this date, the British Army captures Nuevo Chapelle in Belgium. 1922, a state of siege is proclaimed during the mine strike in Johannesburg, South Africa. Walter Middlehauser is the first to fly over the Dimuan Mountains in Iran. 1926, there's a run on Belgian banks. 1927, Albania mobilizes its military due to threats from the kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes. In 27, Bavaria lifted its ban on Adolf Hitler's speeches. Nevada became the first U.S. state to regulate narcotics. You used to be able to buy heroin on the street corners. 1939, 17 villages are seriously damaged by hailstones in Hyderabad in India. 1944, the U-575 sinks the British corvette HMS Asphodel in the Atlantic Ocean. Of the 97 men on board, 92 die. 1945, Japan grants the occupied Vietnam independence. 1945, U.S. troops land in western Mindanao in the Philippines. It's called Operation Victor IV. 1951, J. Edgar, Don't Wrinkle My Dress Hoover, declines the post of baseball commissioner. We had a good friend, a female FBI agent. We had two running jokes. One, where did she hide her gun when in a dress? And two, J. Edgar Hoover's red dress that he was known for wearing. 1964, a U.S. reconnaissance plane is shot down over East Germany. 1966, North Vietnamese captured the U.S. Green Beret camp in the Ashall Valley. 1968, North Vietnamese and Communist Laotian troops overrun a secret U.S. radar facility. It was known as Lima Site 85. It was on a mountaintop in Laos. 1971, the Senate approved the amendment lowering the voting age to 18. 1972, General Lan Nol becomes president and Prince Sirik Mattak becomes premier of Cambodia. 1975, the Rocky Horror Picture Show opened at the Belasco Theater in New York City. I enjoyed that movie thoroughly. 1978, The Incredible Hulk, starring Bill Bixby, premiered on CBS. And in 82, Reagan proclaimed economic sanctions against Libya. Well, we're going to stop our little history session at this point. We were yesterday talking about Billy the Kid. And little's been written about some of Billy's escapades. After his shooting of blacksmith Wendy Cahill. One of the most memorable and actually important to his future actions took place in a small Texas town known as San Elizario. Now, it was established sometime before 1760 as the civilian settlement of Hacienda de los Tiburcios. 1789, the Spaniards established a fort called Presidio de San Elizario that played a prominent role in the Spanish activities in this time. Now, one of the reasons a lot of what I want to talk about hasn't been written about before is San Elizario pretty much ceased to function as a town, and its records were lost. But it was resurrected, and the records were made available, and some very interesting information came to light regarding Billy the Kid. Now, the town that grew up around the fort took the name San Elizario, which is a corruption of San El Cerro, Spanish for Saint Elzear. Saint Elzear of Sabron is the Roman Catholic patron saint of soldiers. Now, San Elizario was El Paso County's original county seat and the location of the first county jail. And one of the traits most admired by those who knew Billy the Kid was his loyalty to his friends. And it was this loyalty that led him into a little-known but important adventure in San Elizario. Now, during the years that are really not discussed much in any history you'll find of Billy, he spent some time in Sonora with a well-known gambler by the name of Mercedes Segura. Now, Billy's knowledge of Spanish and his skill with cards marked him as a first-class gambler and a gentleman. And he was accepted in all the best gambling establishments and by the finest families of the region. Now, according to Pat Garrett, in the book he wrote about Billy, a Monte dealer by the name of Jose Martinez had persistently bullied and insulted Billy to the point of even refusing to pay him money he had fairly won. Whenever Billy would enter the club room, Martinez would pull out a gun, put it on the table, and begin a heated tirade against gringos in general and Billy specifically. Well, finding his behavior insulting and tiring, Billy and Segura saddled their horses, settled their affairs in the plaza, and went back to the gambling establishment. Segura watched the horses, and Billy returned to the club room. And as he expected, Martinez immediately began a tirade of insults, his hand on the pistol that lay on the table. Billy's pistol was in his holster. Well, Billy got tired of it, and after a few moments said, Jose, do you fight as bravely with that pistol as you do with your mouth? Well, at that, Martinez raised the pistol from where it lay as Billy drew his. They both fired at the same time. Martinez was hit in the eye and was dead when he fell back into his seat. Billy was hit in the right ear. Before he'd even hoisted his gun, he'd turned, raced for the horses, and Billy and Segura set a course for the border. Well, a party of some 20 Mexicans gave chase, and that chase lasted over 10 days. And they eventually found the horses that Billy and Segura had ridden out of Sonora, but fresh horses easy to obtain by handsome young men such as Billy and Segura. Finally, the posse gave up the chase and went back to Sonora. Now, the family Martinez offered a very large reward for the apprehension and return of Billy and a smaller reward for the capture of Segura. Unfortunately for them, and fortunately for the two young men, they were never able to bring these two back to Sonora for trial. Crossing the border into the U.S., the two young men went their own ways, and each of them enjoyed numerous adventures before reuniting. Now, Pat Garrett is the primary source for a lot of this information, and he and Billy were actually close friends. In fall of 1876, Arcadius Segura was arrested in San Elizario for what's been described in the records as a lawless act. Now, it's never been specified what that lawless act might have been, but it was considered serious enough he was sentenced to hang. He'd been locked up in a jail in San Elizario at that time, as I said, San Elizario was the county seat. And no one had ever escaped from this jail before. Now, whatever that lawless act that had resulted in Segura being arrested must have been very serious. Now, there was a lot of prejudice against Segura, and there was threats of mob violence. In fact, there were discussions of saving the citizens the time and expense of a trial and just hanging him. And Segura was certain if he didn't get help, he was going to die on the hanging tree, guilty or not. Well, by promises of a rich reward, Segura hired a very intelligent young boy and sent him up the Rio Grande to find Billy the Kid. Segura figured if anybody could help him, be his old friend Billy. And since the two had been in contact periodically, Segura had a fair idea where Billy might be found. After a long and diligent search, the young messenger found Billy the Kid at a ranch 6 miles north of Mesilla on the west side of the Rio Grande. Now, this put the kid in a precarious situation. From where he was located, it was 81 miles to the jail in San Elizario. And that was if he took the most direct route. Unfortunately, he would be required to take a circuitous route in order to avoid being spotted. So in actuality, he was more than 81 miles away. So the question was, could he arrive in time to help his friend? And that was a very real question. But about 6 p.m. that same evening that he got the message, Billy mounted his favorite horse, a gray, and set out for San Elizario, telling the young man to wait on him. He planned on being in San Elizario by midnight. Now, the young boy was naturally skeptical, but Billy assured him his horse could do it. Now, to avoid passing through Mesilla, Billy went down the west bank of the river to the little plaza of Chamberino, which was about 18 miles away. That was the closest ford he felt safe using. You have to remember, Billy was a wanted man. Urging his horse into the rushing river, horse and rider struggled for about a half hour to reach the far bank. And when they did, Billy discovered they were about 500 yards downstream. Now, once crossing the Rio Grande, Billy spurred his horse to a gallop, which they continued till they reached Franklin, Texas. Now, Franklin was another name for El Paso. For about 10 minutes, Billy enjoyed the bounty of Ben Dowell's saloon. Ben Dowell was the first mayor of El Paso. It's 10:15 in the evening, and Billy had covered only over 56 miles on his quest to reach San Elizario. Still had 25 miles to go. Moon watered and fed his horse a handful of crackers before jumping back into the saddle. The two took off on the last leg of this unbelievable marathon. Billy was determined he's going to save his friend. It's believed that Billy and his horse did reach San Elizario before the stroke of midnight, because it was only a few minutes past midnight when one of the Mexican guards inside the San Elizario jail was roused from a fitful sleep by the sound of somebody hammering on the door, demanding that the door be opened. Sleepy guard wanted to know who was banging on the door, and the voice said that they had two American prisoners. They were Texas Rangers. Obligingly, the guard opened the door and stood in the doorway. Billy the Kid caught him by the sleeve and pulled him toward the corner of the building. As the two walked, Billy stuck his pistol into the jailer's side and said that one sound of an alarm would be the signal for the jailer's death. Well, firmly convinced if he resisted, he'd die, the guard gave Billy his gun and his keys. Quickly, Billy unloaded the jailer's gun and threw it up on top of the jail. And then the jailer led the way to the room in which Segura was being held. There was a second guard there, but he found himself looking down the barrel of Billy's gun and decided cooperation was probably the best course of action. So with the help of Segura, the two guards were shackled together, fastened to a post, gagged, and the prison doors locked from the inside. And the keys were thrown up on the roof of the building to join the guard's pistol. Well, mounting Segura on a waiting horse, the two left the sleeping town of San Elizario. It would continue to sleep soundly until dawn. They crossed the Rio Grande once again, and in a little more than an hour, they were sleeping at a ranch owned by a Mexican friend. And that friend hid Billy's distinctive gray horse and rode into San Elizario to watch the excitement when the escape was discovered. Returning to his house, he woke and fed his guest, supplied Segura with a fresh Mustang, and watched his friends light off into the early morning. When the posse arrived, the rancher told a sad tale of being accosted and robbed and sent the lawmen on a wild goose chase. Unfortunately, Billy the Kid's escapade in San Elizario is not well known, though the citizens of San Elizario reenact the event many Sundays for the benefit of visitors. This was another and a major adventure that took place during the missing years in Billy's life. Now, according to the history, on the night of July 14, 1881, Pat Garrett shot and killed Billy the Kid. And the next day, a coroner's jury issued the following finding. We, the jury, unanimously find that William Bonney was killed by a shot in the left breast in the region of the heart, fired from a pistol in the hand of Pat Garrett. And our verdict is that the act of said Garrett was justifiable homicide. We are unanimous in the opinion that the gratitude of the whole community is due to the said Garrett for his act and that he deserves to be rewarded. And it was signed by M. Rudolph, President, Anto Saavedra, Pedro Antonio Lucero, Jose Silva, who signed with an X, Sabal Gutierrez, who signed with an X, Lorenzo Jamarillo, signed with an X. All the information I bring to your notice, Alejandro Segura, Justice of the Peace. Now, this particular document would seem to put to rest once and for all the question of whether or not Billy the Kid was dead. But there are a number of questions that have come up over the years. Now, this document was originally written in Spanish. Three of the members of the jury couldn't write their names and signed with an X, which, for the time, was not unusual. But there's some other questions that have risen about whether the document was true or not. Among those questions, Sabal Gutierrez was the brother to Pat Garrett's wife, Apolinaria, and the husband of Chelsea, one of Billy the Kid's favorite dancing partners. And if you remember, the Justice of the Peace was Alejandro Segura, the same last name as the man that Billy freed from jail. So based on the foregoing, it would seem that the coroner's jury was not as impartial as history would have us believe. And Pat Garrett had to have known Billy a whole lot better than he later maintained. There's also evidence that points out that Alejandro Segura was the father of Mercedes Segura, the man who was rescued by Billy, as I mentioned. And looking further, we see Pat Garrett's version of the death of Billy the Kid is reported in his book, The Authentic Life of Billy the Kid. According to Pat Garrett's account, he was elected sheriff of Lincoln County in 1880 on a reform ticket with the expectation he would reinstate justice in the area. And one of his first acts was to capture Billy the Kid, sending him to trial for the murder of the Lincoln sheriff and his deputy. Now, Garrett was away from Lincoln County on county business when the Kid made his escape from jail. Rather than chase after the fugitive, Garrett kept to his ranch, mending fences and tending to his cattle. And in July of 1880, the sheriff got word the Kid was hiding out at the abandoned Fort Sumner, about 140 miles west of Lincoln. Got two of his deputies, John Poe and Thomas McKinney, and went off in pursuit of the Kid. On the night of July 14th, the sheriff and his two deputies approached the dusty old fort, which is now converted into a home. The residents were sympathetic to the Kid, and the lawman could get little information. So Garrett sought out an old friend, Peter Maxwell, who might tell him of the Kid's whereabouts. And as chance would have it, the Kid stumbled right into the sheriff's hands. Well, when Garrett wrote about this incident a year after it happened, he said, "I then concluded to go and have a talk with Peter Maxwell, with whom I was sure I could rely." We'd ridden to within a short distance of Maxwell's grounds when he found a man in camp and stopped. To Poe's great surprise, he recognized in the camper an old friend and former partner in Texas by the name of Jacobs. They unsaddled, got some coffee, and on foot entered an orchard that runs from this point down to a row of old buildings, some of them occupied by Mexicans, not more than 60 yards from Maxwell's house. We approached these houses cautiously and, when within earshot, heard the sound of voices conversing in Spanish. We concealed ourselves quickly and listened, and the distance was too great to hear words or even distinguish who was talking. Soon a man arose from the ground in full view, but too far away to be recognized. Wore a broad-brimmed hat, a dark vest and pants, and was in his shirt sleeves. With a few words that felt like a murmur in our ears, he went to the fence, jumped it, and walked down toward Maxwell's house. Little as we then suspected, this was the kid. We learned that when he left his companions that night, he went to the house of a Mexican friend, pulled off his hats and boots, threw himself on the bed, and commenced reading the paper. He soon woke up his friend who was sleeping in the room and told him to get up and make some coffee. He said, "Get me a butcher knife and I'll go over to Pete's, get some beef. I'm hungry." So the Mexican got up, handed him the knife, and the kid, hatless and in his stocking feet, started to Maxwell's, which was a few steps distance. When the kid, by me unrecognized, left the orchard, I motioned to my companions, and we cautiously retreated a short distance to avoid the persons who we'd heard at the house, took another route, approaching Maxwell's house from the opposite direction. When we reached the porch in front of the building, I left Poe and McKinney at the end of the porch, about 20 feet from the door of Pete's rooms, and went in. It was near midnight, and Pete was in bed. I walked at the head of the bed and sat down on it beside him near the pillow. I asked him about the whereabouts of the kid, and he said the kid had certainly been about, but he didn't know whether he'd left or not. At that point, a man sprang quickly into the door, looked back, and called twice out in Spanish, "Who comes there?" Nobody replied, and he came on in. He was bareheaded, and from his step, I perceived he was either barefooted or in his stocking feet. Had a revolver in his right hand and a butcher knife in his left. He came directly toward me, and before he reached the bed, I whispered, "Who is it, Pete?" but didn't get a reply. Struck me it might be Pete's brother-in-law, Manuel Abreu, who had seen Poe and McKinney and wanted to know their business. The intruder came close to me, leaned both hands on the bed, his right hand almost touching my knee, and asked in a low tone, "Who are they, Pete?" And at the same instant, Maxwell whispered to me, "That's him." Simultaneously, the kid must have seen or felt the presence of a third person at the head of the bed. He raised his pistol within a foot of my breast, retreated across the room, crying out, "Quien es? Who's that? All this occurred in an instant. Quickly as possibly, I drew my revolver and fired, threw my body to the side and fired again. Kid fell dead, never spoke. Struggle or two, a little strangling sound as he gasped for breath, and the kid was with his many victims. So ends the account of the death of Billy the Kid as told by Sheriff Garrett. Soon as it was daylight on the morning after he allegedly killed the kid, Pat went to the great lengths to establish the fact he had actually killed Billy. He was eventually given a $500 reward the governor posted by act of the legislature. But was the story true? Or was it a story to bring to an end a bloody career of a man known as Billy the Kid and allow him a fresh start, as so many believed? To determine the truth of the matter, you got to look behind the events that transpired at the Maxwell House that night. There are several things about the relationship between Bill and Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid that are not generally known. First, the two have been close friends, so close that Billy called Pat his compadre. Now that's a Spanish word that conveys much more than friendship. It conveys something approaching a family relationship. In actuality, there was a family connection of sorts between the two. Billy's sweetheart was Abrana Garcia, a maid of Pete Maxwell's, and many say the mother of Billy's son, Jose Patrocino Garcia. After the alleged killing of Billy the Kid, Abrana and her son vanished from the Maxwell compound, were never seen around Fort Sumner again. So did Billy take his wife and son and leave for the new start he'd been promised by Governor Wallace? A lot of folks believe he did. And remember the story about Billy the Kid breaking Melquiades Segura out of jail in San Elizario? Well, Melquiades Segura was, in fact, the son of Alejandro Segura, Justice of the Peace in Fort Sumner, and also had a relationship with Abrana Garcia. Some say her name was actually Segura, and Billy was her second. Husband. And Alejandro Garcia is the justice of the peace that signed the document confirming that Billy the Kid was dead. It appeared it was a small world in the late 1800s. And who better to help somebody fake his own death than the man who owed a favor for saving his son? One last bit of information that might throw some light on the story of Billy the Kid's death deals with a very peculiar real estate transaction. Now, Pete Maxwell was the proud owner of the Beaver Saloon in Fort Sumner, a booming business that brought him in a steady income. And nobody in their right mind would willingly give up the ownership of what amounted to a money machine for the proud owner. About a week before Billy's alleged death, there was a bounty hunter drinking in the saloon. He'd announced he was in Fort Sumner with a federal warrant empowering him to apprehend Billy. Well, Billy heard the bounty hunter was in town and spending his time at the Beaver Saloon. So one evening, he went into the saloon. He saw the big man standing at the bar. Tales say he was over 6 feet tall. Billy walked up and stood beside him. Quietly, the two stood side by side drinking, the room holding its breath as everybody present except the bounty hunter knew Billy the Kid by sight. Finally, after sipping most of his drink, Billy glanced at the stranger and asked him if he was the one who'd heard had come to town to get Billy the Kid. The bounty hunter nodded and said he was there to end Billy's career. Billy took another sip and asked if the big colt the bounty hunter carried was the gun he planned to use to kill Billy the Kid. Bounty hunter nodded and said that was the very gun that would kill Billy the Kid. Then, like a awestruck teenager, Billy asked if he could hold the gun that would kill Billy the Kid. Well, after looking him up and down and deciding that Billy was no danger to somebody as big as he was, the bounty hunter had Billy his pistol. Turning to the room, Billy held the big coat up in the air and announced this was the gun that would kill the famous Billy the Kid. Like a schoolboy, Billy examined the gun thoroughly, using his body to hide the fact he was carefully unloading the bounty hunter's pistol. Finally, he handed it back to the big man, empty, and the bounty hunter dropped it into the holster. Well, after a final sip of his drink, Billy asked the bounty hunter if he knew what Billy the Kid looked like, and the bounty hunter said no. After a minute or two, Billy announced he knew what the kid looked like. And turning to face the young man, the bounty hunter asked him to describe the kid. With a grin, Billy pointed to himself in the mirror behind the bar and said, like him. Well, with an oath, the bounty hunter drew his pistol, pointed at Billy's chest, and pulled the trigger. The gun didn't fire. Billy pulled his own gun and killed the bounty hunter with one shot. Finished his drink, walked out of the Beaver Saloon, ended the night. Well, to Billy, this was great fun. Pete Maxwell, who was present, who had talked to the bounty hunter, had also been sent by the U.S. Marshal, was in trouble because he had not made the bounty hunter aware of the identity of the young man. Maxwell could have been prosecuted. The next day, Maxwell sold the Beaver Saloon to Alejandro Segura, and all talk of prosecution ended. Later, every man involved in the alleged burial of Billy the Kid was somebody who was present that night in the Beaver Saloon. Coincidence, the actions of a very select group of men who knew that Billy the Kid had escaped once again. Well, in actuality, according to a tale told by Billy's grandson, while Billy the Kid was being buried in Fort Sumner, or at least, there's another version to the story that Pat Garrett didn't make known. With Billy was a young man who looked somewhat like him. They were both about the same age, the same slender build. And they had both gone to get the meat from a hunk of beef that was hung on the back porch of Pete Maxwell's house. And both went into that bedroom. Both were armed. Well, as Pat said, they came close to the bed. He shot the friend and hit Billy in the head and knocked him out. Stuffed his body under the bed. And then he and Pete Maxwell ran into the house and woke everybody up and said Billy the Kid was dead. But nobody went into the room till the next morning. Well, the young man buried in the grave marked Billy the Kid was, in fact, Billy's friend. Billy, And Abrano Garcia, or Abrano Segura Garcia, depending on which story you believe, with Patricino, and Pat Garrett was actually the godfather of the little boy, which shows the close relationship between Billy and Pat, supposedly left and established a home in Silver City, where Billy lived until he died in the 1830s. Excuse me, the 1930s. The young man that many people believe was Billy the Kid, even up until shortly before his death, was slender, loved to dance and sing, very good with a gun. And as I say, the grandson came to San Elizario to see where he had broken Mukherjee Segura out of jail. Unfortunately, the grandson has recently died, I understand. But the interesting point is that unless you have access to the records of San Elizario, all this information would not be known. Now, we have talked at length about Billy the Kid. Pat Garrett, who risked everything to help Billy escape. Now, Billy had been pardoned, believe it or not, by Governor Lew Wallace, but the prosecuting attorney refused to accept the pardon. There was quite a bit of tension between what they call the suits and the cowboys. And unfortunately for Billy, the suits controlled, and they wanted him dead. Well, Pat was promised $500 to end the Billy the Kid issue. And eventually, and that was a considerable amount of money for those days. Eventually, he did get paid based on the document signed by Alejandro Segura and the coroner's jury. Well, there's a lot of other stories about Billy the Kid that have never really seen the light of day. And the book, allegedly written by Pat Garrett, The Authentic Life, has stayed in print ever since it was written. Now, Ash Upson ghost wrote it. I mean, let's face it, Pat Garrett wasn't exactly Ernest Hemingway. And Garrett had quite a number of issues that would have interfered with writing the book anyway. Now, there were many exaggerations in that book, and the book itself has become regarded as somewhat comical. I mean, according to the book, at the age of 12, Billy killed his first man for insulting his mother. Rescued a wagon train by routing the natives with an axe. But the much more authentic descriptions by Garrett turned him into the kind of legend worth memorializing by people such as Sam Peckinpah. The story put Garrett up there among the highest echelon of lawmen. He spoke of in the same level as Wild Bill Hillcop and Wyatt Earp. The question is, how much of all that is true? I mean, a lot of Wild West outlaws couldn't put the gun down no matter what they tried to do. So the fact that it's believed that Pat Garrett helped Billy the Kid start over, Certainly makes a lot of sense. And there's a number of other stories that are not exactly what history says they are. How about the OK Corral? That fight made Wyatt Earp's name. But the continuing violence against, and avenging the violence against his kin clearly showed he was a very complicated lawman. On the evening of March 20th, 1882, at an Arizona train depot, Wyatt Earp, now this is what Earp said, pointed a pistol so close to Frank Stillwell, his resulting bullet opened a great hole in the man's chest. But before Earp pulled the trigger, he claims to have heard Stillwell exclaim, "Morg, morg." Well, if this is true, it suggests that at the moment Earp killed him, both he and Stillwell were thinking about the same man, Morgan Earp, Wyatt Earp's kid brother. Now, Stillwell had 2 days before been one of the shadowy figures outside the billiard parlor in Tombstone, Arizona, where Wyatt and Morgan were playing billiards. Shots rang out, and one severed Morgan's spine and exploded a kidney. An hour later, Morgan was dead. And Wyatt Earp had had enough. In the annals of the Old West, Wyatt Earp stands tall as the most upstanding lawman of the era. The prime mover of the gunfight at the OK Corral, helping to bring justice to the Wild West by taking on the Clinton gang alongside Morgan, Virgil, and Doc Holliday. He's been played on the screen by no less lights than Burt Lancaster, Henry Fonda, Landolph Scott, Kurt Russell, even Kevin Costner. His legend is renowned. But the truth of the story is a little bit less glamorous. Now, the credits usually roll in these movies after some righteousness has been served up to the bad guys, but in reality, while the Earps won the gunfight, they initially lost in the court of public opinion. They went from proud marshals in a growing boom town to villains, with Wyatt Earp spending a month in jail on murder charges. Surviving Clantons got away scot-free, and in late December, Ike Clanton and others shot at Virgil. Cost Virgil Earp the use of his left arm. Several witnesses later came forward to say Ike Clanton went anywhere near the scene at the time of the shooting. And Morgan's death a few months later turned Wyatt Earp into a vigilante killer. He was going to get vengeance against those who caused his pain, which is not exactly the accepted version of the tale. The Earps had followed their family dream of profit, searching for the ideal spot to put down roots and earn their way to success by whatever means they had to use. That had all gone wrong, starting with the courts, providing no real closure on the OK Corral issue. Well, that set Wyatt out on he was going to get frontier justice. In that part of the Western history, for much of the 19th century, there's so much nepotism because people find the only ones you can trust are family members, according to Richard White, professor of American history at Stanford University. And that's what the Earps do. You can only trust each other. And once you start shooting people's brothers, well, you're in something of, you got some problems. At the time of the gunfight at the OK Corral, which did not take place in the OK Corral, by the way, Virgil Earp was almost 40 years old. Wyatt was in his mid-30s and Morgan was 30. That they were born in Kentucky, Illinois, and Iowa, respectively, says something about their father's sense of wanderlust. And they all inherited that sense of what's over the next hill. In post-Civil War West, the Erskines would bounce between Arizona, California, Illinois, Wyoming, Missouri, and Kansas, with a stop in Indian Territory along the way. There were following opportunities. Teamsters, gamblers, horse thieves, bartenders, brothel operators. And these establishments may or may not have included their respective wives or girlfriends. And ultimately, they became peace officers. Now, these are some, according to several historians, these are some pretty shady guys from the beginning. Wyatt Earp was on the side where the money was. And in the 19th century, what attracts a lot of these guys into law enforcement is that sheriffs very often could also be tax collectors, which is a guaranteed set of income because they get about 10% of all the taxes they bring in. So the reason these guys gravitate to law officers is not because they want to keep order in the streets or do the dangerous and dirty work of controlling drunks in cow towns, but they want to get paid. It's in part with that in mind that Wyatt Earp joined his brothers in the late 1870s in Tombstone. That town was less than a year old at the time. But it would soon see exponential growth. Nearby the silver mines would bring in all the elements until the population hit close to 6,000 in less than 2 years, including gamblers, prostitutes, saloon keepers, and a set of businesses catering to everybody concerned. Now, the law would be an essential element, and the Earps bought into real estate and mines and bars, and Virgil became marshal after a cattle rustler killed the previous holder of that job. Brothers may have been outsiders, but they had a goal and a plan. This was a town they could settle into and stake their claim, along with fellow gambler and trusted associate Doc Holliday. They were making their name, no question about that. Well, that didn't sit well with some of the locals, specifically Act Clinton and his two brothers, rustlers who had used to having their own way in town. Bitterness between the insiders and the outsiders began to foment through a series of incidents involving stagecoach robbery and a murder. Rumors and reclamations fed grudges and public opinion, along with threats by the Clintons and their pals, the McLowry brothers, that Tombstone would be a better place without the Earps. And of course, the Earps had their own opinions. Well, with no cooler heads prevailing, the action exploded in what was a rare kind of gunfight near the OK Corral that quickly took on an air of infamy in newspapers throughout the West. When the smoke cleared, three men, Tom and Frank McLowry and Billy Clinton, were dead. Virgil and Morgan Earp were wounded. Holliday was grazed by a bullet, and Ike Clinton and Billy Claiborne ran off, and Wyatt Earp was the only man not injured. You know, there are very few gunfights like this where people stand and shoot at each other. While most of the murders in the West are going to be from ambush of one kind or another, we have this small residue that's left. To have two guys actually face each other and bang away is vanishingly few, and that's one of the reasons that things like this become classic. Well, we're going to talk more about the gunfight near the OK Corral in tomorrow's show, but until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.